Before we begin, I would like to give a shout out to our patrons on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems, especially Jen, Jesus Vicente, Daniel, Adri, Saul Alexander, Abigail, Luis, Iris, and Kimberly. We definitely do not get paid to make this show, so your contributions go a very long way in hosting the site, advertising, and just the labor that goes into editing and everything. So if you'd like to support everything that goes into making this, feel free to, you know, support us. No amount is too little or too much. So just go to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. All right, let's start the show.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
All right, hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. I am your host, Ruben.
And this is Cassandra.
And today we are actually recording our first episode, like, together in the same room without an audience. Very specific things that don't always happen, because, again, Cassandra is from El Paso, and I'm from LA. And so, yeah, we usually record via Google Chat, so yeah. Google has all of our information, per usual.
Yeah, that sucks. But today we are here only using one mic, and we're not like Skyping or anything. We're just literally sitting next to each other. So this is a first.
Yeah.
It's like iconic.
Welcome to this important moment in Chicanx history. I don't know why that just reminded me that, like, who was it? NB Writers reached out to us.
Oh, okay. So you all remember NB Writers. What's like, we should have played a song. Like a hit, like, what song did they sing?
Something About You, Baby.
Yeah.
Drives me crazy. Something About This Pretty Girl. That's what it was. Pretty Girl.
Yeah. So, you know, if you know who NB Writers are, I used to listen to them all the time in middle school. And they're like, just like Chicanx. Like, rap, royalty, like... Anyway, they reached out, their manager... Was it their manager? Reached out to us via email so that we can have him on our show. On our show, and I was like, is this real? Like...
Are we that Chicanx?
Like this podcast is so Chicanx right now. Like, yeah. We are the Chicanx podcast, and I feel like they maybe never listened to our podcast, because, you know, I just thought it was really random.
Yeah.
But maybe they just Google, like...
Latinx podcast.
Chicano podcast.
Yeah. Next thing you know, they'll be on, like, Locatora Radio or something. Talking about, like, femtech and MB Writers, Pretty Girl.
So, yeah. So that was a moment that we had.
Yeah, that was another moment in Chicano history that must be in the books. Next to Dolores Huerta.
At the Black Parade.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
At the Brown Parade. Sorry.
I'll post that picture up in case you don't know about Dolores Huerta's interesting style choices that are very impacted by Gerard Way in a way that really reflects who this podcast is as a person.
That is. That picture of Dolores Huerta going to the Brown Parade. Yeah, that's like this podcast embodied in a photo.
Except for we're not endorsing Kamala Harris like her.
Yes, exactly. So... On our last episode, we talked about Kamala Harris and why she's just no.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
Just why she's... I was going to call her trash. just everything that's wrong with Kamala Harris and her views. And then, like, 2 days later, maybe, like, I don't know, a few days later, it was like, Dolores Huerta endorses Kamala Harris. And I was just, like, shake my head, you know?
She probably listened in and she was like, fuck these bitches.
She's like, I'm gonna endorse her just to spite them.
Yeah.
It wasn't surprising because Dolores Huerta endorsed Hillary Clinton, and I guess she's very like Democratic Party at all cost. Her loyalty and the UFW's loyalty to the Democratic Party, like, at all costs, that, again, we talk about the Democratic Party and, like, liberalism and how they themselves, like, throw our own communities under the bus, right? And for Dolores Huerta, it's like, she's just so out of touch. And every time I try to critique Dolores Huerta, or I'm sure anybody, me personally, Angie Ganizma, I get a lot of backlash, and I always get the, like, what have you done for our community comments all the time.
You were like, I dropped a banner.
I dropped a banner, bitch. No. No, but yeah, I always get that. Like, how dare you critique Dolores Huerta, and what have you done? And she's done so much. And it's like, yeah, like, Dolores Huerta has done a lot of things in her lifetime. A lot of good things, obviously, right? I'm not saying everything Dolores Huerta has ever done is, like, trash and wrong. I just feel like at this point, I would think that she would be open to critiques, or just the UFW, like, the farm workers movement in general with Cesar Chavez and the way that they treated undocumented people. I feel it's been so many years, and I'm sure they've heard critiques. Like, I know they have, but there hasn't been anything that they've done to, like, change that, it feels, if any of that made sense. So her endorsing Kamala Harris,
After probably getting tons of feedback
or about critique, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, these are both women who are very invested in, like, incarcerating, like, Black people, like, you know, Latinxes, like, how can you support that, right? And it's just, like, comes down to, like, where your politics are. Like, if your politics are with a party or with a people, right? And I don't think that Dolores Huerta's politics are longer with the people, right? Although, like, it was cute to see her at the teacher strike, like, when it happened.
You know what? I saw that picture, too. And, like, to be honest, I was like, oh, this is a really cute picture. Like, I have a lot of problems with Dolores Huerta, but I really like that picture. Like, I was like, I don't know. I just felt like, oh, like, my grandma's marching with, like, these kids. I'm sorry if that sounded problematic because of her age. I just thought it was a really good picture. Like, oh, she's out there walking with the children and, like, supporting the teachers, you know? And like I said, that's what I mean. Like, not everything that she does is, like, trash. And I'm not trying to say that. I just feel like it's important to critique her because I feel like she is, like, I don't want to say the, like, Chicana.
She is.
She is, though. She is, like...
Glorian Zaldua, whom's?
Shitty like Braga, whom's? Like, when we talk about, like, civil rights leaders, like, for Latinx people, especially Chicanx people, I feel like it's Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez. Like, those are the, really, like, the only two that we refer back to. So I think that her being such an important figure, that she would, I don't know, just be more open to critiques, like... During the 2016 election, I think this is what we were talking about, that she, like, accused Bernie Sanders supporters of telling her that she couldn't speak Spanish or that they were booing her or something. And then when like, people watched the video, like, that never happened. And so I don't know.
It was part of, like, look, and this is not, like, us defending Bernie Sanders at all, because no, FTP. No, because
we've already said he's a poser.
Yeah, like, fuck that poser, FTP. But, like, it was part of the greater effort from, like, the Democratic National Committee, the DNC, to, like, discredit Bernie Sanders as, like, a legitimate candidate, right? Because mm-hmm. It was like, oh, his followers are all racist, and, like, you know, they're all white dude bros, and yeah. It's like...
And they're booing Dolores Huerta. Yeah,
when... iconic leader of the civil rights movement, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my perception of her changed after I saw her speak at, like, a Students of Color conference back in 2014, 2013. And it was the most cringy fucking speech, like, I had ever sat through. Like, I remember, like, walking... like, the breakfast line, and she was, like, two people in front of me, and I was, like, so geeked about it, and I was, like, oh, I should ask for a photograph, but then, like, I didn't, and then I was glad that I didn't, because, like, the speech that she gave was, like, oh, we're all African, at one point, she said.
Oh, I think you told me about this, and I couldn't believe it, like,
And then, there was, like, a very strong Filipino community, like, presence in this conference, but also, like, the, you know, the United Farm Workers movement, like, that was begun by Filipinos too, right? But they've been, like, all by buddy race, right? So Lariat Leong was, like, the big, like, figure for them, and he only got his day, like, I want to say like 3-4 years ago, they made a national, like not even a national holiday. I think it was like a state holiday for him. But like him and other like Filipino leaders passed the movement down to Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta because of like they needed to like a younger spokesperson, and also they needed to bridge the gap between Chicanexes and like Filipinos. And like in her speech, like she never credited that. And I remember there was a lot of Filipino students who like felt really like neglected by her. Like they raised up because she at one point she was like, "Where are all my Asian people? Where are all my Black people and like undocumented and LGBT?" And they were and at some point they were like, "What about Filipinos?" And I was like, "Oh, time to go." Like, and it was like, "How are you gonna try to like give shout out to everybody but like not the like community that helped you build your platform?" And so there's always, from what I understand from my Filipino friends, is that like there's always been this like not resentment, but like mixed feelings about, you know, Chicanx leaders like them.
Yeah.
On top of that, also, like Cassandra mentioned earlier, like we can't forget the way that like Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta initially treated undocumented workers, right? Because they saw undocumented workers as like a threat to like migrant farm workers, right? Because it was like, oh, they're just gonna pay these undocumented folks less than us, and they are, yeah, like they're gonna make us look bad and they're not gonna listen to our demands.
Yeah, and they would call immigration on them, which I thought was, you know, when this is brought up in general, I think a lot of people try to excuse Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez and the movement, like, oh, you know, well, they had to do it because they were on strike, and so, you know, these undocumented people, like, essentially calling them like scabs, like,
oh,
like gross. Saying like, oh, well, they broke, like they were on strike and yet they took this work, and so they were hurting the movement. But it's like they were not a part of that, like they, you know, they were just trying to survive as well, you know. But you had them calling immigration so that they can continue their strike, and people try to justify it in that way, and I it's still violent, you know. And I know, and then I know, like, Cesar Chavez, and I don't know if Dolores Huerta personally, but they used to call him, like, I think they would refer to them, like, as wetbacks or illegals.
There's videos of
there Cesar is Chavez. Actual videos, and I think a lot of people also have justified that. Well, like, you know, at the time, it wasn't, like, this big slur, and I just feel like, no, it's still, like, dehumanizing, you know? And I think that is a general, like, Chicanx thing to do. Like, not even Chicanx, just, like, Mexican Americans or Latinx that were born in the United States, because a lot of us do think that we are better because we were born here and are very xenophobic. And I know, because that is like El Paso, and being right next to the border, I think even like heightens those feelings even more. The last time actually I saw Dolores Huerta was a couple months ago, and I think I've mentioned I went to a couple rallies during when people were protesting against the detention of children. She was in El Paso, like at the facility. I think I mentioned it was like a Latino USA thing, and she was one of the speakers, and I thought she was the last person that should have been speaking at one of those rallies. Like, there was no actual like undocumented voices being like uplifted, and there was no like Central American voices either, and I just felt personally like, and like even when she spoke, like she didn't really speak about the actual issue. It was kind of just like, again, we need a vote. We need to push this electoral politics and solutions. And so, I don't know. I just felt like she's just disconnected, I think.
I remember like a strong part of her speech when I saw her was like her being like, "I created Si Se Puede," like, but they never give women credit. And I was like, okay, that's fair. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah. Because I think around that time, too, a couple months, or, like, I think it was last year that they made the, like, her documentary.
Hmm.
Which I thought, wow, like, it took them such a long time to give her, like, a documentary and, like, to acknowledge her work in the movement. Which, again, is valid, you know? Like, also, Cesar Chavez's wife, I think it's Helen Chavez, like she also gets erased a lot too, you know, her contributions to the movement. So I think that's totally valid, but it's also not an excuse, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, we just went on this long rant about Dolores Huerta, but you know,
it all started with the jacket.
It all started, you know, with the Black Parade, in a sense. But you know who else is named Dolores? That's amazing. Number five's girlfriend in the Umbrella Academy. Her name is Dolores.
After the famous Dolores Huerta.
After the famous Dolores
in
Huerta.
The Umbrella Academy, Dolores says, si se puede, at one point. And I was really empowered as a Chicken X emo.
Okay, so if you don't know what we're talking about, me and Ruben's, like, well, the highlight of my life, of my whole life and existence lately, has been the Umbrella Academy, which, if you don't know, is a comic written by Gerard Way, and Netflix made, you know, gave him a series all to himself, and so they made it, and it is amazing.
Yeah,
and I was kind of scared to watch it, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I was excited, but at the same time I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this. Like, I don't want to be disappointed. Like, I don't want to hate it. What if it's just fucking corny? I don't know. I didn't know what to expect, but I loved it.
Yeah, I was, because when his comic book came out, I kind of ignored it, because it was like, I was like, why is he trying to do this? Just go make more music. Like, I think that was my feeling. I was like, this is why y'all broke up, so you can go and draw little cartoons, little bitch. Like, but, so I never read it. I think I resented it. And
like, we resist.
Yeah, TBH. But then he released like 2 or 3 new songs with this project as part of the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. He's giving us what we want, so... And he really does give us what we want. Like,
He gives the emos what, like... The Umbrella Academy, if you're like, a My Chemical Romance fan, and you, like, you know, follow their music videos and, like, everything, that's what the Umbrella Academy is. Like, the aesthetic of it, like, I feel is just so My Chemical Romance, like, Black Parade... It's just so Gerard Way and so emo, and I fucking love it.
And it is also, like, very not okay. Like,
it is. It is also very not okay, like the suits.
Yeah.
Like, and, yeah.
Yeah, the number five character never gets out of that little kid suit.
Oh, my God. Okay, wow. And so my favorite character and actor on the show is, well, the character, his name is Number Five. And he is, like, a 13-year-old, I mean, is he 58? He's like 58, and he's trapped in like a 13-year-old's body, which sounds weird if you haven't watched it, but, and I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but that's the character, right? And it's just, like, brilliant. Like, his acting is, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
I can't think of, like, a child actor that sells, like, their performance.
Yeah.
Other than, like, Dakota Fanning at her best.
Mm-hmm. Macaulay Culkin, maybe, but he didn't play all he like.
All he did have to do was
yeah,
like, ah.
Yeah, that's true. I felt like, because I loved like the Home Alone movies, but he didn't really play like this intense,
no.
Serious, smart, intelligent, I should say, character, witty.
He just played an asshole, kind of. Like, what was his name? Macaulay Culkin character?
Kevin.
Kevin was
Kevin
just an asshole.
Something.
He was just like Dennis the Menace.
Oh my God, Dennis the Menace was the
Doesn't
worst.
Doesn't he also play that?
No.
He plays Richie Rich.
Richie Rich! And let's just...
Anyway.
Got sidetracked.
So
back
he's a really
to,
good child actor.
Yeah, his name is... how do you say his last name? Gallagher?
Gallagher, I don't know.
Gallagher.
He's white. You know, at the end of the day, like...
He's white. His name is Aiden. He's 14, and he's just, like, an amazing actor. He's amazing.
Yeah, like, he was in a room full of adults, and he had to, like, not act... He had to act, like in a, like, older than them.
Yeah.
And, like, that was intense, because I don't know, like, I was afraid of adults, I think, as a kid. Like, I would never be able to, like, act like they are not above me.
Yeah. I also read an interview where I think he was one of the... Out of, like, the cast, that he actually was a My Chemical Romance fan and actually... knew who Gerard Way was going into the project, so him also having to act in front of, like, could you imagine having to act in front of, like, Gerard Way as a My Chemical Romance fan and thinking, like, oh, I wonder what he thinks of
I think I would freak out for the first few minutes, but then after that, I'd be like, Gerard, you kind of look like a gerbil right now. No, like, because I think about, like, I can't get that picture of, like, him and Mary J. Blige.
Like, where he's, like, really short, and he's just, like...
Are you talking about Gerard Way? Yes. No, he's not. They're, like, the same height, but, like, he's, like, really, like, he looks, like, really, like... Like, I don't know, nervous or something. And she's just like, I'm used to, like, she's a star. Like, and it's just like the funniest shit ever. Because he looks so, like, geeked, but also, like, he looks like he hasn't left his house in a minute.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, hey, you need to shower, Gerard Way. Like,
well, okay. No, but in that interview, Aiden says that Gerard Way told him he was doing an amazing job with his character. So. Anyway, so yeah, check out the Umbrella Academy, and you'll see what we're talking about with this amazing kid actor, and also one of our faves, Ellen Page. She's on that show.
Yes, White Lesbians
coming through, and you know, so she's representing on the Umbrella Academy for all the lesbians, for all the gays.
Yeah, even though there is a queer character on it.
Oh, yeah. His name is Claus.
Love him. I love everyone except Luther.
Yeah, Luther sucks. Fuck Luther. I don't really care about Allison either.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, look. On this podcast, we stan number 5, Diego, sometimes. Except he's such a fucking Aries. His character's such an Aries. Like, he just wants to fight everybody. And Claus. And, of course, Ellen Page, even though her, you know...
You know, we're not going to ruin it.
We're not going to ruin it. Just watch it and then give us, and then we'll talk about it next time because we're just going on a long rant about it. But yes, watch The Umbrella Academy, support our dad, Gerard Way, and yeah.
So one of the things that made us happy about the show is that Ellen Page was like booked and busy because like it feels like after she came out, like her roles dried up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, she has talked about how her management told her not to tell anybody that she was gay, that she was a lesbian, because it would ruin her career, and it was just something that she just wasn't open about for those reasons, right? And she came out, I want to say a few years ago, because I saw that speech where she came out. I think it was at a GLAAD award show.
Yeah.
I don't recall, but... She came out and yeah, she didn't, it looked like she was just like she fell from the face of the earth. Like she just wasn't acting in anything. So our dad gave her a job because he's a, you know, he's an ally.
Yeah. I still think about the time that he like mentioned that he like might like not, he might be non-binary.
Yeah. He has hinted that he... Like, he hasn't said, like, I am non-binary, but he has tweeted, you know, some implications of that, which I think is amazing, and I make sense also.
Yeah. But I also think about, like, how Ellen Page, like, a part of why she might have gotten blacklisted was because she came out. Another one is because she's, like, her politics are pretty, like... All right, like
yeah, for a white lesbian
who's rich as fuck,
who's rich,
I assume.
We assume. I mean, I'm sure she made money off Juno, but anyway, the point is, yeah, her politics aren't terrible. Let's put it that way. They're more
progressive,
more quote unquote progressive than a lot of other celebrities, especially white ones,
especially of her caliber. Like, I feel like she's like. I feel like she was A-list, like she might be like B-plus at this point.
I think so. I think after Juno she was, and I think a lot of people, like, I remember when I watched Juno, there was like old white people in that movie theater because Oprah told him to go watch it.
And I think I was Academy Award nominated.
It was. So anyway, yeah, so Ellen Page and she has a job. I'm always keep going back to she has a job. But recently Ellen Page actually called out the Trump administration for their bullshit and attacks on queer people, but also specifically Chris Pratt, who, if you don't know Chris Pratt, he is on Parks and Recreation. That was like, I think his, I don't know if it's his first, but like his first major, you know,
breakout role.
And he is in Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, I'm sure you all know who Chris Pratt is. And Chris Pratt, he goes to this really homophobic church. And I know a lot of people are like, okay, well, all religion and churches are technically homophobic. But this church...
It's like explicitly
is like
so.
Yeah, like there's one... They're one of those like... What's that preacher's name? Like Joel Osteen or whatever. Like, the, you know, like those big churches where they just have a lot of money and they don't really do anything, but they're homophobic as fuck. That's like one of the churches that Chris Pratt attends. And Ellen Page, I think on Twitter, someone praised him for something. He said something, I don't recall what it was. He said something and people were like, oh, you know, giving him props for some mediocre shit. And Ellen Page retweeted it and said, oh, you should ask. I think it was a Stephen Colbert. And she was like, oh, you should ask him why he attends this homophobic church, essentially. And everyone was like, what?
And I have, I also have a tweet out. Like, I put this out like a year or two ago when I was like, Chris Pratt is like, the Charmander to Clint Eastwood's, like, Charizard. Because, like, Clint Eastwood is also very, like, Republican. And, like, he... I think he, like, spoke at the Trump, like, Republican nomination thingamajigger. Like, that's when he... But, like, they have a lot of the same politics. But because Chris Pratt is, like, cute and, like, in big movies, like, people just ignore it. And slowly people are starting to, like, figure it out and, like, react. But I feel like we're not going to see a big backlash to him until he's, like, 70 and, like, has already made millions and millions of dollars and, like, has nothing to lose. You know what I mean? Because, actually, he posted on his Instagram, like, basically, like, Blue Lives Matter, like, fairly recently.
I feel like I remember... It was, like, for Police Enforcement Day or some shit. And I think his response to Ellen Page's comment he also made... It wasn't even an apology. It was kind of just, like... That's not true. My church doesn't do that. I love, you know, like when religious homophobic people are like, I love the sinner, not the sin type of statements where they're like, I love everybody, but I still think you're going to hell. You know, like that.
Yeah.
That's what I felt his post was. So he, I mean, to everyone else, they were kind of like, oh no, that's not true. He just, you know, he just follows God's laws. I don't know.
Yeah, so Ellen Page, like, took a big risk, like, doing that, like, as someone who's, like, trying to, like, not be blacklisted anymore as an actress, right? Maybe, and maybe we're exaggerating, maybe she's not blacklisted, maybe she just, like, purposely took a minute away from the spotlight, but still, right? Like, I also want, like, praise, like, some of her politics, right? Because she did mention when she called out, you know, the vice president, specifically in the Trump administration, about their homophobia and transphobia, is like she centered, like she was like, you know, black trans women. She was like, there's a reason why in America, like black trans women, like life expectancy is still 35. And like she mentioned, like how, you know, queer people of color experience so much violence. And she brought up Jussie Smollett, right? And his attacks that happened at the end of January. And she was like, you know, when you have an administration that has this much power and this and hates people, specific people, like, they're going to encourage, like, violence, right? And, not like, no amount of fame and money are going to protect people, right? And so I really like that she made that clear on such a national stage. And I... Like, yeah, like, I never understand people are like, oh, like, artists shouldn't be political. Because I do think that if you have, if you're given a platform, like, you should be able to advocate for things.
Yeah, and she did come out in defense of Jussie. And that is one of, like, the big things that has happened in the last few weeks, right? And so, if you're not up to date on it, so, Jussie is an actor on...
Empire,
which, to be honest, I have never seen that show. I haven't, but I'm familiar with, you know, the premise of the show, I guess. And I think this, it's been like a month or more since this happened. So in Chicago, he had made a report that he was attacked. And he's, I guess, said it was by two white guys wearing MAGA hats. And it was racially motivated. And it was like a homophobic attack, like really violent. And he went to the hospital. And so I think at that time, everyone mostly was sending, you know, thoughts and wishes, like a lot of celebrities. And as like the story unfolded, it just became a shit show, really, because I don't even know what's like the timeline, really. It was just kind of like all out of nowhere, the Chicago Police Department kind of just said he was lying. Like, I don't know what was the first thing they reported, but it was kind of like this attack, or that they couldn't find these men, and there was no camera surveillance, and so they didn't believe that it was real. And I think at that point, a lot of us were thinking, why wouldn't it be real? Like, that's just a weird thing to say. And then it turned into Jussie paid these two actors who also work with him and staged this whole attack. And he paid them with, like, a check, which was weird. It was just, it's just, like, things that don't make sense. And I think a lot of people at that point, I don't know, I don't want to say at that point, because I think all along people wanted the story to be fake. And that is disturbing to me, because I think everyone was just hoping that he was lying. Everyone wanted to catch Jussie in a lie, and I think that's very telling of people and how they respond to attacks on queer people and black people.
Yeah, because one of the things that people like always bring up is like, you know, if Jussie Smollett did lie, then like people are not going to believe like survivors of violence anymore, right? And it's like, the thing is about that is that like people never believe survivors of violence, right? So.
And I don't think, and that's what I was trying to get at. Like, I don't, and a lot of people didn't believe him, period. A lot, and that's what I mean when people wanted it to be fake. Like, that's the same as not believing someone when you're just hoping and want it to be fake. That, like, you don't believe that person. And so, like, you want them to prove you right, right? And so, yeah, so I don't buy into this, oh, now he's going to make it hard for anyone really to be believed. And it's like, no, like you weren't believing us to begin with. I do think that let's say that it was orchestrated. Let's say that he did, that this is like a fake thing that he orchestrated, right? I think that his actions then in some way do affect queer people and black people. But not, I don't think it's in the sense of like not being believed in the future. I just think that the people that would be affected by that would be black people as a whole and queer people as a whole, because when racists and homophobes are online attacking Jussie, essentially what they're doing is attacking like all black people and all queer people and like calling all of us like liars and whatever the case is. But I don't think that those actions would like somehow, it's like, oh, because Jussie lied, now I'm not going to believe you. And it's like, no, bitch, like you never believed us or him to begin with, and you were just waiting for this to be fake so that you can be validated in your bullshit. So
I think like the worst way that this can really affect people is that it might make them hesitate before reporting something. Mm-hmm. More than I think, and that's like a on the side of the survivor, not the side of like society, right? Like, so that's what I can see happen. But overall, like, the only person who's really directly being affected by all this is, like, Jussie Smollett, right? Like, if he did lie, like, his career's over. Like, I feel like even if he didn't lie, like,
his career's over. And that's something I think also to unpack there, because I feel if this were somebody else, if this were someone white, if this were someone straight,
it already happened in the Olympics. It was,
oh yes, the Olympics, that white guy, Chris? That said he was robbed,
yeah,
that...
in Brazil, but really he was just drunk and disorderly at a gas station, and everybody was just like, oh, boys will be boys.
Yeah, boys will be boys. So I feel like if this was the case with somebody else, it wouldn't really, like, people would be upset for like maybe a couple months or like a week even, or and not even, I feel like people would justify it somehow, like, oh, you know, maybe they're depressed, or try to use one of those tactics, right? And I just feel like because he's queer, because he's black, everyone's just kind of like going in on him. Like, this was the number one story on like all media, like just really dramatic. And like all of a sudden now, after actually the Chicago PD said that he actually didn't pay these men, that they were lying, all of a sudden you don't hear about the story anymore. Like, everyone stopped reporting on it after they said that he was actually, that Pete, the police department, lied. So now,
like, the story is just all over the place. Like, I'm inclined not to believe the police. I feel like folks were really quick to believe them, and it's like, we're all about
weird. Yeah,
we're all about like fuck the police and fuck one too, but all of a sudden a queer black person is being accused of something, and like, okay, like, they're right, time to go to jail. And it's like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, it was really weird how quick everyone who quote unquote says, you know, fuck the police and we don't believe them in other instances wanted to believe them so bad in this instance, which, it's like, this is the police department that literally covered up, like, an unarmed young teen's death it happened a few years ago, but the trial just happened, and all the cops that covered it up didn't get any jail time. And I forgot, what's this guy's name? Van Dyke? Chris Van Dyke? I think that's a police officer's name. He only got, like, 7 years or something, which is nothing. And then all of a sudden, we're supposed to believe this entire police department right away without asking any questions. Like, that's how much people are invested in homophobia or in racism.
Yeah. And I think one of my favorite people online, the Gran Barones, tweeted, like, you know, if he did lie, like, wasting police resources is, like, revolutionary.
Oh, I love that tweet. Yeah. I was going to share it on Chionisma, and I was like, no one's going to get it. or whatever. But, yeah, it was, like... And I love it because it's so true. It's, like, I got to laugh. Like, it's not funny. It's not funny, and I think it's opened up a lot of conversations that are not funny. But at the same time, like, I agree with, like, Ruben that I think at the end of the day, who is really affected by this, and it's him, it's his career. So if let's say he did orchestrate this, like, what did he do technically? Like, he literally just lied to the police and wasted everybody's time, and, like, okay. Like, and then,
yeah,
you know,
like, and the thing is that, like, his reputation is just so tarnished at this point that, like, I really don't think he has a career after this. Like, at all.
Well, we will tell Gerard to put him in the new season of The Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. I think, like, the person, the Olympian that I was talking about earlier was Ryan Lochte, who is a white Latino who in Brazil... He said that he was, like, mugged by a bunch of, like, Brazilians. And it's, like...
Mm-hmm. And then they got, like, video surveillance.
And it was, like, no, he was just, like, drunkenly just, like... He was just, like, drunken. And, like, people just got over it.
Yeah, like, it was like, oh, okay. That's fine.
Yeah, okay. And it's, like... And it's... Oh, you know what it is? What I was trying to get at. So what I'm trying to get at with that is that, like, the villains in the Ryan Lochte story were people of color, and he's a white man, whereas the villains in Jussie Smollett's story are, like, white racists, right? And he's a black queer man. So it's also, like, who do we quickly believe, and who do we quickly forgive? And it's just, like, it's very telling.
Yeah, and also, after Like, the first time they said that Jussie lied, Trump tweeted that Jussie needed to apologize to the MAGA people.
Did he call it, like, MAGA country? I don't know.
It's he was, like, MAGA supporters.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was, like, Jussie needs to apologize for his racism. And I'm just, like, what? How and in what way were, like, MAGA people affected by this? Like, no one went out to, like, riot against the MAGA people. No one, like, were they hurt, you know? Like, were they distressed during this time? It was just weird that these MAGA people demand an apology. And it's like, first of all, you were not affected in any way. You were not hurt by this at all, physically or emotionally. But second, let's not act like it's not something that you don't do. Like, it's something that you haven't done. Because these bitches literally... Like, look at what happened in Charlotte. Charlottesville. Like, I know that the big thing during the Charlottesville was this white woman, Heather, being killed. But it was also... They attacked a black man. I remember, like... You know, people sharing this fucking video of this black man being attacked by all these fucking MAGA Nazi people. And, you know, and then they want to act like this isn't something like, oh, we would never do that. We've never done that. So why are you accusing us of doing this? And it's like, no, you have done that. And you would do that in the future. And it's not like some out of the norm thing that he said.
Yeah, I think their biggest thing is that, like, now people, like, they make people think they were racist. And it's like, what the fuck does your red cap mean if it doesn't mean that you're racist? Like,
you're already racist, bitch.
Like, that is literally what Make America Great Again is shorthand for, right? Or long form for. It's like, I'm a racist. Like,
it's disturbing. The MAGA thing, as most of you know, I was at a Trump rally. I was being a tramp at the Trump rally, and I was surrounded by people in those hats, and I don't even know how to explain it. It was a lot to take in emotionally, like, because that is what that hat symbolized. Like, right when you see that hat, like, you know this person is racist. Like, there's no other way around that. It's just that hat is, like, does represent, like, Nazi shit. Yeah, so when I was at the Trump rally, and then, you know, there was, like, people, when we were waiting in line, there was, like, a bunch of people selling the hats. And there were some, like, in, you know, for the racist women, like, in pink, you know.
Shut up.
Yeah, in, like, pink or camouflage. And they were selling all this Trump merch. And I was like, oh my god, get out of my face. But I couldn't say that because I was, like, undercover, you know. So it was a lot. And all of those hats were booing at me. So that was intense. Just the hats. They had mouths. They were booing at me.
Ugh, I couldn't imagine.
I saw fucking Ted Cruz, y'all. I saw him. And, like...
Hashtag educated Latino.
Our educated Latino. I can't believe, like, I heard his corny ass voice, like, in real time, in real life. It was like, why am I here? It was like, it was a lot, but it was fun.
To disrupt the space.
To disrupt the space, yeah. And when me and Jose were being escorted out.
Who's Jose?
Is that an actual question? My skinny boyfriend.
Nice.
That's me, like, flipping him, flicking him. Yeah, when we were getting escorted out, Trump was like, oh, what did he say about us? He was like, who are these people? Where do they come from? And he was like, oh, they're going to go home to their mommies right now. And I don't know what that means.
You're like, but I did go home to my
mom. Go home to my mom. Yeah, it was funny because I was like, I am going to go to my mom. And I was I was scared of what my mom was going to say. Because a lot of people saw me on the news.
Shut up.
Yeah, like, right after people were messaging me, like, because I guess they were doing, like, a live thing, and so people saw me, and I was like, oh my god, my mom saw me. And, you know, if you're a Latinx person, you know that maybe talking about organizing or politics with your parents, at least for me, it's not... My mom doesn't get it. Like, she doesn't get what I do. She thinks I'm weird, and she thinks I have, like, these really radical politics that are just so out there. And I don't know. She just really thinks I'm weird. And she doesn't get it. I don't know how to explain it. Like, she just doesn't understand. And so I was waiting for some, like, mom lecture about, like, why are you doing this? And it's disrespectful. Or you should be at home doing homework or being a mom. I don't know. Some shit. But she actually never said anything. So I don't know if it's because she didn't see it or because she's just, like, embarrassed and wishes that it didn't happen. Sorry, I went on a long rant there.
No, I think the only experience I've had with that is, I guess, in recent years, the most recent occasion of that was when I was supposed to come home for dinner, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be late because I'm at this, like, anti-prison rally when the prison strike was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, can I borrow this matraca to, like, make noise and, like, you know, the thing that spin and do, like clacking sound? Yeah, so she was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm going to go demonstrate. And she was like, just like dead silent. She didn't understand, like, what it meant to go, like, protest prison. Like,
yeah. I don't know. And I don't know how you explain, like, I think also for me and my mom, like, she doesn't speak English and I speak Spanish, but there are still some things that I can't translate, or I feel that I can't really communicate with her on top of it just being a new conversation for her. So it is, like, even right now, like, when I do talks and I come out of town, like, she doesn't understand. Like, I think she genuinely thinks I'm just out here, like, vacationing, like, every week. I'm like, no. So, yeah. My sister, who I have mentioned on this podcast, voted for Trump because of her and her whack husband. I thought for sure I would run into them at the Trump rally, which was something else, which I didn't, and I don't know if it's because they didn't go or because I just didn't run into them. I thought that would have been awkward. I feel like, oh, my brother-in-law would probably tell them I was there to disrupt. like, he'd be like, please get her out of here. But
arrest her, officer.
No, but I saw my sister, like, 2 days later, and she, like, grabbed me, and she was like, she's like, all I'm gonna say is that your hair and makeup looked really good.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. I was like, thank you.
Does she own a MAGA hat?
She doesn't. Her husband does.
Oh.
I think my sister regrets voting for Trump. I think I'm going to try and excuse her because I'm still trying to hash this out with her. But I do think that she does regret it, which I think a lot of people have, even though it's like, what did you expect? But her husband, I think, is the main, like, source of trying to influence her to do that. But anyway, let's not talk about that.
Let's talk about good things.
Good.
Like Yalitza Aparicio.
Yes. Okay, new topic. No more MAGA shit. Yalitza, yeah, so she didn't win her nomination at the Oscars this past week. But you know what? She was still the first Indigenous woman actress actress to be nominated for that award. And I think that, and her, it's her first, as her first fucking role too. It wasn't like, I think that's amazing. That is amazing in itself. I think her presence at in any fucking space in Hollywood, especially a place like the Oscars, is amazing as well. And the fact that, like, she took her mom, and I think that's so cute. And also, if you've seen any videos from the fucking Oscars where they interview her and, like, they don't even get the translation right, I don't know, have you seen those videos? Like,
at the Oscars?
Yeah, there's this one video of her, she's on the red carpet and they're interviewing her and they have a translator, and, like, the translator's not even translating what she's saying correctly, so the way that she translates it in English makes it sound, I don't want to say, like, she's not smart. It just doesn't, she's just, it's just really bad. It's just really bad translation where they just, I don't know where they got this translator from. But anyway, yes. So Yalitza's success, I think everyone, at least that I've seen in my circle online, are all about Yalitza. But now that the Oscars are over, it's kind of like Ruben, we mentioned this at our talk yesterday. It's like, where does she go from here? Like, is she going to get more roles, or is that it? You know, is it she was just like this one time, here's your quote unquote representation, or here's like your moment, but now, you know, that's it. We go back to the white actors and white celebrities.
Yeah, and it's like, if that's the case, then what did her moment mean? What was the impact of it? And I don't know. I'm really scared that it might have none, right? Because she still hasn't secured other roles. Like, she talked about it, like, a week or two before the Oscars. Like, she was still like, oh, no, I haven't gotten any roles, but I'm trying to at least give Hollywood a try, right? Because she was originally just wanted to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. But then she, like, once she got, like, booked and busy, like, she was like, I can really do this. And, like, she started understanding, like, the significance of her existing in that space, right? And so I just want us to, like, continue to uplift her and, like, remember that, like, this isn't just, like, a one-time thing. Like, if folks are really about representation and that's, like, your politic, like, A, you can't just be, like, championing, like, white Latinxes, right? And B, like, once one of them makes, you have to look at the kind of work that they're given, right? Because I still have my issues with, like, Roma being about a servant, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, her and Yalita's first big role being as a maid. And also, like, we have to keep a tab on their impact, right? Like, we can't let this just be the beginning and end of that.
Yeah, and I didn't really think about that until you brought it up, but it is, if this is her only role and this was, like, her only moment and she just kind of disappears, it does feel very ugly to think. It's kind of like she's disposable, you know, like, she was here, we appreciated her, and, like, it was all good, but now it's time for you kind of, like, to go back to your role as an Indigenous woman in Mexico. And that's to be invisible. Yeah. So that does feel fucking ugly. And I hope that she does. I really hope that she gets other roles and, like, better. It's weird to say better roles because I know that this role landed her, like, an Academy Award. But
Nomination.
But I just hope that she's able to. Because it's also, like, the fact that she played a maid, a servant, it's also, like, the black woman stereotype where it's like the mammy, where it's these are the awards that are awarded to black women and women of color where they're maids, where they're servants, and there are these stereotypes and those are the only roles that are worthy of a nomination, right? So I hope that she, I just really wish for her success because of her as a person, as her as an Indigenous woman, but also to spite all these fucking white Mexicans, these white Mexican celebrities who have, like, just fucking attacked her since she came on the screen. Like, what's his name? Sergio
Goyri,
and I can't really name. I just see his face and, like, I know who he is. He's, like, in a lot of novelas that I watched growing up. I can't think of one right now, but if you Google him, I'm sure you all will kind of be familiar with him. But he called her an Indigenous slur, essentially, and
it wasn't just him. It's also, like, Yuri said that, yeah, like, I was gonna say, she's too ugly to be a star.
And then those, like, there's, like, three actresses that wanted to have her removed from, a nomination. Like, some awards in Mexico, like, they didn't want her to be nominated because they were essentially saying, oh, well, like, she's not really an actress, you know, this is, like, she made this one movie, and so she doesn't deserve to be nominated. And then today, I actually saw, and I'm not saying these people's names, because I don't really care about them, and I'm sure if you all want to, you can Google their names, these white celebrities' names, but there's, like, I guess a show in Mexico, and one of the hosts did a fucking brown face trying to impersonate Yalitza.
Yeah, it was La Parodia.
La Parodia. That was today. And so all of these attacks are just, they're not surprising. And I don't want to say I'm glad. I'm never glad, especially that Yalitza's getting, like, has to, like, deal with this. But it's, like, for the people that are, like, oh, we're all Mexican and everything's, like, there's no racism in Mexico. And it's, like, are you kidding me? Like, all of a sudden, this indigenous woman is succeeding and thriving. And this is, like, how white Mexican celebrities react to that. So I hope everyone sees it for what it is. And I think some people will still be like, oh, you know, but it's not all of us or whatever. I'm just annoyed and I'm mad that Yalitza has to fucking, like, deal with this. But it's at the same time, I'm like, who's at the Oscars right now? Not you, bitch. Yalitza is. So that's why they're mad.
Yeah, that was, like, I don't know, the best thing ever. Like, knowing that all these big, like, novela actors can never step foot in the Oscars. But her in her, like, first try, she just casually, like, oh, yeah.
I'm what's here. That saying? Or, like, how are you going to talk shit from outside the club when you can't get in?
Yeah. So that was fantastic. I don't, along with the, like, well, we don't see race in Mexico thing, came the whole, like, oh, we're all Mexican and we're all indigenous. Ugh. So, like, Yalitza's cover is not the first indigenous person because all people of Mexican
people descent. Said that?
Yeah.
Oh, bye.
It was, like, the most ridiculous thing. I'm like, when are we gonna dead this fucking nationalist, like, anti-indigenous language of, like, we are all indigenous? Like, if we were all indigenous, then fuck, indigenous people would have to fight for actual, like, rights and representation and, like, equity.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say people saying that, like, essentially Yalitza represents all of us.
Oh.
Because I see that a lot, too, where it's like this fucking white girl, like, white Latina. Not someone specific, but what I've seen is just, like, white, like, Latinxes that are like, wow, I see myself in Yalitza. I'm like, what? Like, how do you see yourself in Yalitza? And it's like, I, like, you can support her and you can feel like I'm glad and I'm happy for her success, but I think as a white person to say, like, I see myself, like, Yalitza is me and I see myself in her and she's my representation is kind of whack to me. But that's, like, yeah, going back to, like, we're all indigenous because we were all colonized and I'm trying to get back to my roots and I'm just so tired of this conversation. I'm fucking tired of it. But lately I feel like I see it a lot more. I see it all the time, but I feel like lately I don't know if it's because of Yalitza, but I have been just reading a lot of tweets and a lot of articles by people trying to reclaim their indigenous roots. And it's like 2019. I just feel, I don't know. I just feel like how you're really, like, people are just out here saying they're indigenous with no understanding of what it means to be indigenous or, I don't know. I don't even know how to say it.
Without, like, connections to community or anything, just like, oh, one day, like, oh, we're mestizaje, we're all mixed, great, I'm indigenous. And it's like, no, mestizaje was pushed in Latin America because they wanted to erase indigenous people, right? And when you, as, like, someone who has, like, no connection, right, try to immediately claim indigeneity instead of, like, respecting people who are actually indigenous, right? Like, you contribute to that violence, right? Because the reality is that indigenous people in Latin America are still treated, like, absolute the worst, right? And that's not something that most mestizos, like, put up with. Like, and when we try to claim these oppressions that are not our own, like, we don't see how much space we're taking up that can instead be used to actually help indigenous peoples, right? So one of my friends who is actually indigenous, when Chicanexes do that, they're like, oh, so what have you done to give back to whatever community you're from? Or what community even is that? And it's like, if you can't answer that, then what are you doing? Like, why do you feel so entitled to these spaces? And I think that a lot of it comes from this, like, in ability and what's the word? This hesitance to really explore the fact that, like, some of us might come from, like, violent colonizers. And so, like, what does it mean to want to feel to be a part of something and to retrace our roots then? And I think that's, those are harder answers to come by and to ask.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie either. I was one of those people, like I've said a million times on this podcast, I was the typical, like, Chicana, Aztlan, anti-Black, nationalist person. And at one point, I think I did try to identify as Native, like, slash Indigenous, right? Without, like, truly understanding even what that meant. Because in the Chicana movement, it is, like, they try to... I think, like, the Chicana movement tries to push that on you. Like, you have to, like, reclaim your Indigenous roots. And if you identify as Latinx, if you even use the word, like, mestizo or whatever, then you're just, like, colonized and you need to decolonize. And decolonizing means, like, appropriating, like, this identity, which is, like, being Indigenous, you know? Like, and I really thought that. Like, I really did, like, that in order, because I was Chicana, like, I needed to, quote-unquote, decolonize, and that meant taking on this Indigenous identity that, again, I didn't even really explore or unpack or understand. I just felt like that's what I needed to do and be. And now, like, you know, I've grown and I've unpacked that, and so now I'm like, wow, I can't believe I used to be one of those people. But I feel like at this point, I feel like a lot of people have had more conversations about this. So one of the things that I see a lot is like what Ruben just brought up, that it's like having to deal with the fact that you do have like colonizers in your ancestry line, right? And that's a fucked up thing to come to terms with, that some of our ancestors were colonizers, and that's fucked up, but that's just something that we have to grasp. And I also think that whenever I tell people this, like, that there's a difference between Indigenous and being of Indigenous descent, that they're like, well, who are you to tell me, you know, that I can't reclaim my roots, and who are you, like, you're a gatekeeper, and you're, like, that's one of the things I get a lot, and it's like, no one said you can't be curious about where you come from. No one said that you're not allowed to research or learn some Indigenous language. I guess that's like a thing people like to do. Like, no one's saying that you can't do that. But it is, there's like a big difference between tracing your roots or trying to connect with it and explore it versus like actually fully saying you're Indigenous and kind of profiting off of that. Just using it to
take up space.
Yeah. And I'm not saying everyone like tries to use it to to make profit, but I have seen it, and it's not okay at all. And yeah, so I think like with the Yalitza, it's like a great example of that. If we look at the way that Yalitza is being treated, and then you are like some mestizo, and especially in the United States, and you're saying you're Indigenous, it's like, what do you do? Like, how are your experiences the same as actual Indigenous people? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, be reflexive. So yeah, like, be reflexive, be mindful, be respectful. Like if you choose to, you know, try to reconnect, like, ask yourself, like, what is there to gain? Like, will you be hurting anyone? Like, what do you want from reconnecting? And what are the limits to that? Because I can understand how, like, looking back can help you grow, but there's certain, like, boundaries that we gotta respect. Yeah. And so with that, we are going to go into our artist of the episode, and it's a Pisces season, so we wanted to, and it's also like International Women's Day, like during Pisces season.
Yes,
right? So we're like, oh, it should be a woman Pisces.
Yeah. So, yeah, I feel like we just kind of were all over the place in this episode, but I hope that you were able to follow that. And I think it's because, like I said, we're recording face-to-face, so it honestly just feels like me and Ruben are having our own conversation.
Yeah.
And so, we're, you know, when you have a conversation with your friend and you're kind of, you know, start talking about all these other things. But I hope that you followed that conversation. Yes, so it's Pisces season, and we listed some like cool Pisces, like Kesha is one of our favorite Pisces, but we already played Kesha on one of our previous episodes. Kirk, anyway,
we wanted to focus on the most famous Pisces.
The most famous Pisces, and her name is Rihanna. Yes, she is a Pisces, and I think it's very interesting because I've looked at her birth chart, and she has an Aries moon rising Venus.
Shut up.
So she has like a lot. So she has like a Aries stellium. So I think when I think of Rihanna, I just think of her as an Aries because she has a lot of Aries energy, and I think that's why she's a bad bitch. Like,
so four placements equals
three placements equals stellium. So it's like that's it's more powerful, I would say, than like her Pisces. But she is technically, obviously, still a Pisces.
Yeah. Oh my god, I'm like. Venus, Mercury, and Sun is Aquarius.
Yeah, he's like the Aquarius Supreme.
Wow.
Yeah, so, yeah, Rihanna's a bad bitch because of her Aries energy, to be honest. Sorry. I think a lot of Pisces... Because I see a lot of people that make Pisces tweets in regards to Rihanna, but it's like all her Aries energy, if that makes sense. So, sorry, Pisces. You're not a bad bitch. But you are very dreamy. I think Pisces are dreamy. And, you know, when I think of Pisces, I think of, like, dreamy, like, sensitive.
Oh, God.
Sometimes doormats. Sometimes very manipulative. Okay. Let me not drag Pisces right now.
Anyways, Rihanna.
All right, sorry.
I'm just like, Rihanna wouldn't, like, she wouldn't like to be serenaded. Like.
No. I feel like maybe when... Her when you get to know her, because I see the sweetness in Rihanna. Like I see it, like she's just like a bad bitch, but I also see the Pisces. Like I can see it.
I feel like she's good with children. I always see pictures of her with little children. And like in that, okay, and that brings up this thing about like I actually don't really like Rihanna's music. Like I like her as like a figure. Like I like that she's like you know
her, just her herself, persona, her persona
that she like you know. Doesn't like let men like run her over, I guess.
And I love that. I love that she's like does not give a fuck about men at all whatsoever. Especially how she did Drake. That was the best.
Yeah, and then she had that one billionaire boyfriend, and then there's just pictures of her pointing at him and just
and then making out with him.
Yeah.
That's such an Aries. That's an Aries shit. Oh my god, I just love her. I love her. I love the way she dresses. I love her fashion. I love her style. I love her. I think she's so beautiful. Okay.
Yeah.
I like Rihanna's singles, but I'm not going to lie. I don't really... Like, I feel like I've never listened to one of her albums, like, the whole way through. So, I do like some of her music. Like, I like her music generally, but I don't... I'm not invested in it. But I do love her, and I stan her as a person all the time.
I think...
Forever.
Empty was the first album that of hers that I really invested in. I think that was... her best body of work. I tried to in the past, but like it just wasn't my thing. And I think it's because she really allowed herself to like develop as an artist and like gave herself time to like deliver a project, right? Whereas before she was releasing albums like every year, and I'm like, how is that?
There's a lot of singles, yeah.
Yeah, and like now that like her fans are like, where's the album? She's like not delivering that, and I'm like, that's because she's like, she learned from her last album. Like that she has to take her time to make something that is of value.
Yeah, right? And also like she's doing like so much shit right now. Like Fenty, like she changed that whole like the whole makeup lingerie. Like she knows what she's doing. Okay, so relax on the album shit. Let her be.
Yeah. Yeah, she really did change up like the makeup and panty game. I think she's making like men panties now, like soon. I think she like patented something.
Yeah. So the thing was, we were like, okay, Pisces season, and also it's we're in March, so it's Women's History Month. But It's also going to be International Women's Day this week. And so what we were thinking, like, what's, like, this feminist anthem? And my personal, one of my personal feminist anthem is Needed Me by Rihanna. And Ruben's fave is Bitch Better Have My Money, which are both two very iconic songs in which, in the video, she kills people. She's like, that's such an Aries thing to do. Like, I'm just going to make videos and I just kill men and white women.
She has like three videos of that nature. Where she kills men.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. So we're going to play. What do you want to play?
I don't know. We can play Mrs. Rocks and Over.
Okay. We're going to do this. So.
One, two, three. Huh. Okay, yeah. So we're playing Bitch Better Have My Money because I won Pizza's a Rocks game. And this song was, like, just a random single that she, like, put out before Anti was released.
Mm-hmm.
And the music video is, like, this, like, mini movie that I don't think she had ever tried to do that kind of project. It was, like, 7 minutes long and, like, takes her on a journey of, like, kidnapping her accountant's, like, wife because he stole money from her. And it's, like, actually based on, like, her real life because her accountant, like, took, like, millions of dollars from her. I think she was bankrupt, like, briefly because of him. And it was, like, her trying to get poetic justice because I think, like, getting actual justice from him was, like, a little more difficult.
But also, I know that Needed Me didn't win this round. But if you haven't listened to Needed Me or you're not familiar with her, that is one of my feminist anthems. It's amazing. I love it. It's just like bad bitch energy. Like, I just love it. So, yeah. So, we're going to wrap this episode up with Rihanna, Bitch Better Have My Money. And thank you so much for listening and for everyone that came out to our event last night at UCR.
Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Bitter Brown Femmes, and then on Twitter at Bitter B Femmes. And if you want to, like, book us to do, like, a live recording or anything, reach out to us at bookings@bitterbrownfemmespodcast.com or
email us,
DM
us, and we can send you the information.
Yeah, because Cassandra and I, again, do not live anywhere near each other, and so it's, like, nice to, like, record together and, like, share space and also meet all of y'all, because the show would be nothing without all of y'all who, like, boost our stuff and, like, support us and bring us out and, like, just lend us all your energy.
Yes, that's how we stay young. We're elders now. We're adults.
We are. Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, with that, we'll stop talking because I feel like we've been talking for a really long time. And me and Ruben will go back to watching Celine Dion videos now. And we'll catch you all next time.
All right. Bye.
Moon la la.
Bitch better have my money. Y'all should know me well enough. Bitch better have my money. Please don't call me on my blood. Pay me what you want me. Ballin' bigger than LeBron. Bitch, give me your money. Who y'all think y'all frontin' on? Like, blah, blah, blah. Louis 13, and it's all on me. Nigga, you just bought a shot. Kamikaze, if you think that you gon' knock me off the top. Shit, your wife in the backseat of my brand new foreign car. Don't act like you forgot. I called a shot, shot, shot. Like, blah, blah, blah. Pay me what you want me. Don't act like you forgot. Bitch better have my money. Bitch better have my money. Pay me what you want me. Bitch better have my. Bitch better have my. Bitch better have my money. Sign up to Rihanna while the whole club fucking wasted. Every time I drop, I am the only thing you're playing. In a drop top, do 100, y'all in my rearview mirror racing. Where y'all at? Where y'all at? Where y'all at? Where y'all at? Like, blah, blah, blah. Louis 13 and it's all on me. Nigga, you just bought a shot. Kamikaze, if you think that you gon' knock me off the top. Shit, your wife in the backseat of my brand new foreign car. Don't act like like blah, blah, blah. Pay me what you want me. Don't act like you forgot. Bitch, better have my money.